broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Welcome to episode 944 of I Doubt It Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Dalamore, joined today by the lovely, talented, and indeed scholarly, Brittany Page, everybody.
Well, there was some exciting news that we received from some people who sent it to us. And
what? That's cryptic.
Yeah, we're already on a really strong footing here. From Kyle Tharp, who is a writer and researcher and author of The Chaotic Era, or just Chaotic Era, a new newsletter about politics, media, and online influence. And in that newsletter, Kyle published the fastest growing political and political adjacent YouTube channels by net new subscribers, Q1 2025. And wouldn't you know it, Jesse Dalamore was on that list.
On the list. Not in the top half. I think right in the middle.
I don't think we need to focus on the ranking overall, but it's an interesting graph because the progressive or liberal channels are in blue, and then you have the conservative Republican channels in red. And so there's people like Megyn Kelly on here, Candace Owens, Joe Rogan, Tucker Carlson, those figures.
Who are some of the red on the red chart? The conservatives that I'm beating.
That you are beating. Okay. That would be Piers Morgan.
Ah.
Benny Johnson.
All right.
Jordan Peterson.
Very nice.
PBD podcast.
Patrick Bet David.
The National Desk. I don't know what that
don't
is.
Don't know what that is.
Nelk Boys. I don't know what that
I've heard of that, but I don't know what that is.
CBN News.
Oh. CBN, former home of Pat Robertson, everybody.
New York Post.
Okay, now let's go back the other direction.
Oh.
And who are like the top five that are beating me just ahead of me?
That are the just ahead of you.
Conservatives that are beating me.
Conservatives. Tucker Carlson.
Oh.
Charlie Kirk. Turning Point USA. Valuetainment. And Megyn Kelly.
Valuetainment. I think that is also PBD.
Yeah, I think there's some overlap here because, well, I guess Charlie Kirk probably has a separate channel to Turning Point USA and
has different
content. So it probably is the same, but a different content, different channel.
So I guess if you're not subscribed to both of us, Brittany Page and me, on the YouTube, and you're just an audio podcast listener, yeah, just go subscribe. It's free. Mm-hmm. And you can help us overcome and beat the Pumpkinhead wonder, Charlie Kirk.
Well, and that's what's nice about it is that Kyle's finding here is that progressive YouTube pages are growing faster than conservative YouTube channels. Yeah, so
wasn't it just a couple months ago that like there was like, holy shit, the right is dominating this space, and all of a sudden we're seeing some growth the other way, which is great.
Yeah, and I think when looking at this, the overall message that I get still, though, is that it is overwhelmingly male, overwhelmingly white, and so I would just, and we periodically do this, I would just kind of encourage the audience to think about the media that they consume. It's not necessarily a bad thing that you watch white men give you the news, but it's harder for people who aren't white men to come up in this space, and they also have important voices, so it's important to subscribe to those channels and make sure that you are clicking like and sharing them and watching them and making sure that you're supporting them too.
Yeah, coincidentally enough, yesterday in a video or two, I did a call out to the audience that I want to signal boost up and coming creators or smaller creators. So let me know. And I said, look, don't tell me like who you'd want me to have on the show or who you want me to signal boost. Don't say David Pakman, who has triple the subscribers that I have. He doesn't need my help with the signal boost. Mm-hmm. I want to hear about women creators, Black creators, queer creators, people who really need to be added to this space and have people diversify their media diet mm-hmm. by also including them. I did that yesterday. So that's, yeah, it's kind of a nice springboard.
Yeah, and inevitably when you do that, because I've done that too, I'll be like, tell me, you know, who you're watching and who you're listening to that represents a more diverse spectrum. And people will be like, oh yeah, I'm watching, you know, Adam Mockler and David Pakman and Luke Beasley and yeah. Jesse Dolemore. Right. And I'm like,
white dudes.
Oh, cool.
Right, right.
So one more thing that we want to talk about before we get into some listener communication is that we were at Senator Cory Booker's speech, the record-breaking speech on the 31st to the 1st. We got to attend the final, like, 5 hours or so.
Almost five, you know, four plus, but not quite five. But yeah, we were in there. And if you leave, you leave. You don't get to go. I mean, what he did was Herculean and crazy. Well, I'm like, yeah, we didn't pee for 5 hours. Well, he's there for 25 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was emotional and remarkable.
Yeah.
Also, yeah. He wasn't reading the phone book. He wasn't reading Sam I Am or Green Eggs and Ham. He was talking about substantive policy and statistics. And it was moving. Look, Cory Booker is not the paragon of political ideology. He's a middle-of-the-road kind of Democrat. But I think he can be moved. I think he's a guy that could be shifted farther left.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did was remarkable. And he broke the record of famed racist segregationist Strom Thurmond. So yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of conversation in the aftermath of whether or not it was performative and whether or not it meant anything and why didn't he do it during some sort of legislation that he could disrupt or something like that. And I think inevitably we're always going to have these conversations because there's going to be people that are...
It's never good enough for some people.
Yeah, and I get it. People are upset. It's a disturbing climate that we're in right now. But I do think it was meaningful in many ways, particularly for Black people in this country, to see the historic nature of his speech and see him break that record. And it was powerful listening to him talk about how Strom Thurmond didn't want someone who looked like him to be on the floor in that building doing what he did. And that matters when white supremacists are currently dismantling our government. It does mean something.
Yeah.
And so that's what I took away from it. It was fascinating to watch everything, just like watching the floor move, watching senators come in and out, watching the behind the scenes stuff that takes place. They do not allow you to speak. You can't take notes. You can't have your phone. You have to check it in. And so we were just sitting there.
Yeah.
For 5 hours,
yeah,
alone with our thoughts and responses, but it was very remarkable. So we were lucky to be there.
Very, very lucky to be there.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we are going to have a full show today. We're going to be talking about a lot. So hopefully you are like in this for the long haul. You're press and play. You have like a long tum time in the bathroom, you know, whatever you got going on.
Does the audience know the code? Do they know your code?
Well, if they don't, they do now. What else could it possibly mean?
That's tum time means taking a dump.
That's what it means. Everyone knows. So, okay, we have some listener communication to get to. We're going to start with a message from a Patreon supporter named Stuart. And Stuart writes, "Greetings, Jesse and Brittany. Just wanted to say thank you for the end of your Patreon gift that arrived in the mail the other day. I didn't think it would be viable or cost effective for you to send anything to Australia. So it was a big surprise to see an envelope adorned with an I Doubt It sticker sitting in my mail pile, and it really made my day. Here's hoping for an eventual better political future for your country and by extension the rest of the world. We have a federal election coming up in May. There's a whole lot of Trump-esque bollocks being bandied about by the opposition party, and I really worry that we too will fall victim to the anti-incumbent sentiment that has been seen elsewhere in the world."
It is a problem. We see movements like this where like the right wing takes hold, and even in countries like Sweden, where you know, here in America, Sweden and Scandinavian nations are maligned by conservatives, and you know, oh, it's socialism, and they've even seen their right wing movement take a foothold. Germany has a far right party now that's dangerous and gaining power or gaining influence, and we hope that you don't catch the cold that we are suffering from right now.
Yeah, this was a very nice message, Stuart. And of course, we're going to send the end of year. It is viable. It is cost effective
because
you are supporting us. We were actually very surprised by how many international Patreon supporters
we have.
And we did
multiple trips to the post office to buy international stamps.
Yeah, because we kept running out. We're like, no, this will be enough. And then it was not enough. But I mean, Germany, France, Denmark, like
a shit ton of Canada.
Everywhere. Yeah, tons of Canada. That's probably the most. And then I would say maybe second was probably, I don't know, Germany?
Maybe.
Germany, also, a lot.
A lot of UK, a lot of Japan.
Yeah, a lot of Japan.
It was interesting. I did kind of a creeper thing where I would type in the address to Google just to kind of see where people live. Not like, oh, this is this person. Maybe that's weird to say.
I think it's weird to say. I think you shouldn't have said it.
Well,
I'm leaving it in, though.
It's out there.
You did what you did.
But thank you all. Listen.
No, well, tell us why you did it or what you learned from it. You can't just say you did it and then not tell us why you did it.
No, it's just like an insight. That, oh, this is, because it's like a world away.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was curiosity. Hey, fuck you, man. But if you're sending your money this way, we're sending the gift that way. You're not like, oh, only if you're in the United States.
Yes,
absolutely not.
And I guess we should talk about what the end of your gift was this year. So it was two stickers, and one of them was your Dollamore Daily bat phone sticker.
Yeah.
Where you do a bit on the Dollamore Daily.
I call it a bit,
where
too. You looked at me like, is that okay to call it a bit?
I didn't look at you like, is that okay? I just looked at you like, that's what I said. And it is like when you do your preacher stories, like right-wing watch stories.
Yeah, like these self-identified, self-proclaimed prophets of God.
Right.
And I talk about them acting like they have a bat phone to Jesus, which led me to like, oh, I should get a bat phone to Jesus. So I went on Amazon and bought a red phone, like a bat phone.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And then you do a little bit.
The rest is history.
And so that sticker memorializes that bit.
Yeah.
And then we also have a Vote Leopard sticker, memory spotty Vote Leopard.
Yeah, there's a tweet out there about a woman who voted for the face-eating leopard party, shocked that the leopards ate her face. There was some tweet that went out, and it kind of got memorialized again. It took off, and now it's kind of a saying, and it's a leopard biting the face of a happy smiley face. You know, like the yellow shit happens or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Smiley face.
Yeah.
I'm a good describer today.
Yeah, so the leopards eating people's faces party, like, meme thing, I think has been around for a long time. But we had an artist create this, and their name is Abby Portner. So if you, like, go to our website and look at our shop, we have other leopard merch, if you really loved the sticker. And not to promote the merch, but I'm just saying that we gave the artist credit on the website. So we'll put the link to the artist's website in the show notes of this episode so that you can go and see that artist's work to ensure that that artist gets credit for that.
And thanks to all of you for your support over the years and this year, and that's why the gift went out. We love and appreciate you very much. It's heartwarming that such a vital, vibrant community has built up around this little show that we do.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to a voicemail. And this is from an anonymous person because they did not put their name in the voicemail.
Hi. I was just wondering why people are not upset about the fact that we're paying this foreign country to house our prisoners and millions of dollars going there when we could put them in the United States and pay a private prison. Why is no one mentioning that this is a paid prison? Why would they give people back? Thank you. Bye.
Well, I don't know that it is correct to say that no one is upset by it or talking about it. We We certainly have, and it is, to coin a phrase now, I'm going to make something up here on the fly, it's fucked up that this is taking place.
Yeah, so just, I don't know if the full background was given there, but the prisoner, the Venezuelans who were sent to the El Salvador prison known as SECOT, and it is a horrible place. We're going to be talking about it extensively on the show today. But one thing about this voicemail, and I maybe they didn't mean it like this. They said, does anyone have an issue with the United States government paying millions of dollars to El Salvador to house these people who are now in prison? And that is a fact. That's happening. The Trump administration is paying millions of dollars to El Salvador for this service, quote unquote.
And then they're also paying exorbitant amounts of money to send our Homeland Security Secretary, Kristi Noem, down there to do little videos, little vertical videos and photo ops with the prisoners behind her, like as a harbinger of bad things to come if you come to the United States. It's all just a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, but then the second part of the voicemail is when we could be sending that money to private prisons. And so I don't know if that was just, I don't know if that was an intentional phrase or if that was a misunderstanding of, like, you meant to say we could be investing that in other ways here. I don't know.
It's almost like it's akin to, it's a distant cousin of when people say, why are we helping these migrants? We could be helping our homeless vets.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why are we sending the money for these prisons? We could be funding our own prisons.
Well, especially when privatized prisons are a problem.
Yeah.
We should not want privatized prisons. They lead to more violence. You're incentivizing incarcerating people. Like, we don't want privatized prisons.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to kind of correct that for this caller to make sure that, I don't know what it was. I don't know what's happening there, but I just want to make sure that we know that privatized prisons are not like something that we should want and hope for in this country.
Yeah, well, there shouldn't be a profit model surrounding incarceration at all.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's the main thing. And yeah, I just wanted to correct that.
Right.
So
consider it corrected.
Thank you for that call. And there is something I want to talk about, though, where you just touched on it, where people will say, why is no one talking about this? I promise you someone's talking about it.
Yeah.
I promise you someone is talking about it. You may not know they're talking about it because you may not know they exist, but I promise you.
Yeah, well, also, it really also just points to the fact that people need to diversify their media consumption, because if you're just listening to fucking MSNBC, people act like that's like a leftist channel. MSNBC is just corporate Democrat media. That's not some leftist Antifa channel, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ugh.
So, okay, thank you for those messages. We want to thank our new Patreon supporters and our existing Patreon supporters who increased their pledges. And those new Patreon supporters are Eddie P. Kathy G. Timothy M.
Josephine L.
Welcome back, Josephine L. And shout out to Brian.
Oh, yeah, Josephine and Brian. Oh, yeah.
We also want to give a shout out to Nicole B.
Are they in country or are they still abroad?
Well, we can't. What are we going to tell everyone their address to go Google it and look it up like you?
Wow.
Like you do, your number one hobby? We can't do that.
Bringing it back around, huh? I can't escape the shame now.
Shannon B. Wait, did you say Nicole B?
Nicole B.
Andrea J.L. The Friendly Place. Karen D. Fab Quack. J.D.
Quack. J.D.
Lauren.
Is J.D. Vance
a
patron?
No. Well, maybe. Lorenz A. Neptune.
Tracy B.
John. Bernard and Pamela D. NJW. Heather T. Wanda E. Diane M. Kate. And Steven N.
And Steven N.
There's a Wanda that, like, hates me a lot, so I always get a little worried when I see the name Wanda.
That aggressive commenter?
Yeah.
She fucking hates.
Always coming after me. The day I die is going to be a day of celebration for Wanda.
Celebrate.
Okay, we want to give a shout out to our Patreon supporters who have increased the pledge, and that would be Matt B. and Christina S.
Matt B. Christina S.
And also Nicodemus P.
Nicodemus P. Thank you very much.
So I want to just reinforce that if you have not received that end of your gift that we talked about, to please send us a message on Patreon and we will get that fixed. I only heard from a few people, so I'm happy that it seems like most people received them. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you didn't, just let us know and we will fix that ASAP.
If you too would like to become a Patreon supporter and help us produce this work, go to patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast. And if you'd like to communicate like these listener communicators did, it is 657-464-7609. And of course, as always, IDoubtIt@dollamore.com.
Hackers don't need much. Just one leaked password can potentially unlock a treasure trove of personal information, leading to stress, pain, and permanently wrecked credit. Don't be an easy target. Get protection by Aura today. Aura protects your identity, finances, and family, all in one powerful app. Get real-time alerts, safeguard your accounts, and block scams before they happen. If identity theft strikes, we help you recover. Stay protected at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen.
Dollamocracy, facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So, like we said earlier, we're going to spend some time talking about the Venezuelan migrants that were sent to that maximum security prison in El Salvador because...
Without due process.
Yes.
Without any proof that they are what the administration claims they are, which they claim they're terrorists and criminals, and they are... Studies we're looking at, like a scant percentage actually have criminal records. And most of them have no criminal, the vast majority have no criminal records.
Yes. And here's what is so troubling about all of this is that there's so much happening all the time that it is very difficult to keep up with every terrible thing that's happening.
Yeah.
And it feels really overwhelming to even attempt to do that. But this story is really important, not only because of what is happening to these people, but also what it can mean for all of us going forward.
Because Donald Trump, and I don't know what the lineup is here. I haven't looked at the rundown. I haven't seen everything. Donald Trump is now also signaling he wouldn't mind sending Americans to this prison. American citizens to this prison who are criminals, quote unquote. Which means, by extension, he could deem someone a criminal, have them imprisoned, and then ship them off to this supermax insane torture prison in a foreign nation.
Yeah. So 60 Minutes did a really important investigative report on this, and we're going to play two parts of it. And so this first one is basically the government has not released the names of the migrants that it sent to El Salvador. Reporters have had to dig up that information. They relied on leaks from government officials.
Yeah, also, let's really drill down on the fact that they're sending Venezuelan nationals to an El Salvadoran prison. They're not even sending them home. It's not deportation to their place of their birth. They're sending them to a whole different country to be imprisoned there.
Right, and they've made mistakes. They've actually acknowledged that they've made
administrative
mistakes.
Administrative errors.
Right, yeah. But they still don't want to bring the administrative error back.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's get to the 60 Minutes report. We're going to start with the first clip, and then we'll get into a second clip as well.
The shackled men were forced to lower their heads and bodies as they were unloaded from buses and taken to El Salvador's mega prison known as the Terrorism Confinement Center, or SECOT. Andre Hernandez Romero was among them.
Andre is a 31-year-old Venezuelan. He's a makeup artist. He is a gay man. He loves to do theater. He was part of a theater troupe in his hometown.
Lindsay Tozlowski, Andre's attorney, says he does not have a criminal record in the United States or Venezuela. She says he left his home country last year because he was targeted for being gay and for his political views. Last May, Andriy made the long trek north through the Darien Gap to Mexico, where he eventually got an appointment to seek asylum in the United States. At a legal border crossing near San Diego, he was taken into custody while his case was processed.
Did he have a strong asylum case? We believe he did have a strong asylum case. He had also done a credible fear interview, which is the very first part of seeking asylum in the United States, and the government had found that his threats against him were credible and that he had a real probability of winning an asylum claim.
But last month, Andriy did not appear for a court hearing.
Our client, who was in the middle of seeking asylum, just disappeared. One day he was there, and the next day we're supposed to have court, and he wasn't brought to court.
You use the word disappeared.
Yeah, I use that word because that's what happened.
But Andriy did appear in photos taken by Time magazine photographer Philip Holsinger, who was there when the Venezuelans arrived at Sukkot. Holsinger told us he heard a young man say, "I'm not a gang member, I'm gay, I'm a stylist." And then he cried for his mother as he was slapped and had his head shaved. By comparing Holsinger's photographs to photos of Andriy's tattoos taken by the government, we were able to confirm that this is Andriy. His lawyer, who was representing him pro bono, had never seen these photos before.
It's horrifying to see someone who we've met and know as a sweet, funny artist in the most horrible conditions I could imagine.
You fear for Andriy's safety in there?
Absolutely. We have grave concerns about whether he can survive.
In October, Tom Homan, who is now the White House border czar, told 60 Minutes the Trump administration's mass deportation plan would start by removing the worst of the worst.
We're going to prioritize those with convictions. We're going to prioritize national security threats. We have to do that. You got to get the worst first.
But are they the worst? The Trump administration has yet to release the identities of the Venezuelan men it sent to El Salvador last month. We obtained internal government documents listing their names and any known criminal information. We cross-referenced that with domestic and international court filings, news reports, and arrest records whenever we could find them. At least 22% of the men on the list have criminal records here in the United States or abroad. The vast majority are for nonviolent offenses like theft, shoplifting, and trespassing. About a dozen are accused of murder, rape, assault, and kidnapping. For 3% of those deported, it is unclear whether a criminal record exists. But we could not find criminal records for 75% of the Venezuelans, 179 men, now sitting in prison.
So we've shipped them off to their possible death. Because eggs were expensive, everybody.
Yeah, this has been the story that I've struggled with the most this week, because I don't know how anyone watches this and just doesn't feel rage, just absolute rage for what's happening. I mean,
happening in our name.
And we don't, and there's over 200 people that were sent there. It's like 238 people, I think. And this is just one story that they've been able to confirm. Remember, the government, they're not apparently wanting to tout their achievements of getting the worst of the worst off the street, because they won't reveal who they sent and what they did. If they were proud of getting the worst of the worst off the street, then they would give those names. They would give their records. They would be holding press conferences,
bragging
presenting the
about
evidence.
The accomplishment.
Right. And so what if it is, like they just said, they can't find records for 75% of them. I saw a recent news article that said 90% lacked a criminal record in the United States. What if the 90% of these people are like this person who is a gay hairstylist, who is crying out for his mom.
Who's here on an asylum claim, having escaped Venezuelan gang violence, and now he's in a prison filled with accused gang members.
Right, where there's no oversight. We don't know what's happening to him. There's no... He may never see his family again. I mean, that's...
He may be murdered in prison, abused, raped and tortured in prison.
It could be the end. Yeah. And So I just, the weight of that is, I don't understand if people are understanding yet what they've done to people.
Right.
And what's particularly disturbing about this is the way that the Trump administration is defying court orders, getting this, you know,
ignoring federal judges.
Chuck Schumer a couple weeks ago was like, yes, it's a constitutional crisis. I'm not worried yet about the defying court orders. I'll be worried when he defies the Supreme Court.
Right. And moving the goalposts.
I kind of fell into this thing of like, okay, yeah, so he'll defy the Supreme Court and then we can like really get going, like finally. When is he going to need to do that with the Supreme Court that we have?
Oh, yeah. They cannot get enough of the aroma and taste flavor of Donald Trump's taint. They fucking love giving him all the power necessary to turn the United States into a fascist fuckhole.
So let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. This second part that we're going to play of the 60 Minutes is particularly about the government not answering questions.
CBS News published the only list of all 238 deportees.
The government is refusing to answer almost every question from the court.
Based on what grounds?
Well, now they've invoked what's called the state secrets privilege. They are saying they can't even confirm details about the planes.
We asked a Department of Homeland Security spokeswoman what evidence the government has, besides tattoos and social media posts, linking people like Andre and Herse to Tren de Aragua. She cited state secrets and ongoing litigation as the reasons DHS cannot comment on these individual allegations.
Buenas tardes.
Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, who visited Sikolt last month, declined our request for an interview. At the prison, she recorded this video. She was standing in front of a cell packed with Salvadoran gang members, not Venezuelans.
But know that this facility is one of the tools in our toolkit that we will use if you commit crimes against the American people.
The Trump administration is paying El Salvador President Nayib Bukele's government $6 million to house prisoners it sends to Sikolt. Lawyers and family members of the Venezuelans told us they've had no contact with the men since they arrived.
Do you have any idea how long he might be there?
We have no idea.
Alirio Antonio Fuenmayor's younger brother, Alirio Guillermo, was picked up by immigration agents while working as a food delivery driver in Utah. Though he had no criminal record, he was sent to El Salvador last month.
He is an innocent person. He has not committed any crime. And he's in a maximum security prison.
The ACLU's League Alert has spent decades challenging immigration policies of Democratic and Republican administrations. But on the fate of the Venezuelan men?
What would you say to these families who are terrified right now about their relatives currently sitting in this prison in El Salvador? Will they ever see them again?
I hope so. But, you know, there's a real danger that they remain there.
You're saying that there are Venezuelans who very well may have no gang ties that are right now in one of the hardest of hardcore prisons in the world that may never get out. They may never see the light of day again.
That's what I'm saying.
And that is being done in your name if you're an American. Your tax dollars are going to fund this terror against human beings, all based on lies. I mean, if you heard in the clip there, Kristi Noem, if you commit crimes against the United States, this is what your punishment will be. This is what you're going to be subjected to. And they're not even proving through due process a constitutional right of those who reside here. Whether you're here legally or not, you have constitutional rights. Remember this, when Republicans bang on about the Constitution and our natural rights and our God-given rights, these are constitutional rights. The Constitution does not grant you rights, it protects your natural rights. So if you're a human, you have those rights. The Constitution is just there to protect it. And they are no due process. Several constitutional rights are being violated in this case and in the case of those college students who spoke in a way that Donald Trump didn't appreciate, so he's also sending them to prison.
And you've probably heard, I mean, you heard in that clip, they keep talking about how bad this prison is, how bad the SACOT is. And there was an interview that William Brangham on PBS NewsHour did with Noah Bullock. He's the executive director of an international human rights group that's based in El Salvador. And he gave specific details about why this prison is so bad.
Yeah, the SACOT has definitely been presented as the model of how strong men should deal with the worst of the worst. And there's no doubt that there's an implicit cruelty and dehumanization in the treatment of the prisoners there. They leave the lights on 24 hours a day. They restrict the time of like about an hour a day, apparently, that prisoners can leave their cells. The overcrowding is excessive to international standards, and the access to toilets and other hygiene clearly seem to be limited. But those conditions seem better in the sense that in other prisons, we've seen testimonies of prisoners taking turns standing and lying down due to overcrowding. Skin disease is rampant. It's more likely that prisoners in the other prisons have scabies on their skin or even signs of physical abuse than the tattoos that you see in the images that are often projected from SACOT.
So in addition to Abrego Garcia, this man who was taken from Maryland, admittedly now by the U.S., mistakenly, and put in this prison, it seems like all of these prisoners that have been deported from the U.S. are in a somewhat of a legal limbo. The U.S. says they're not in American custody anymore, and yet they haven't been charged with any crime. So are you able to access or able to talk to any of those prisoners to give us a sense of what their status is like?
One of the commonalities among all the maximum security prisons is that families and lawyers do not have access to the prisoners. They're entirely cut off. Under international standards, that on itself could constitute a situation of forced disappearances. Many family members in El Salvador don't know if their family members are dead or alive. And now that situation has been transferred to Venezuelan families who aren't able to verify whether their family members are dead or alive. A challenge for judicially for the people being deported is, like you said, these are people who haven't been convicted of anything. They're being held in a country, a third country, where there's no clear jurisdiction. What prosecutor could investigate the crimes they allegedly committed? What judge could even see their cases? And what judge could oversee their rights while they're in detention? They're in a judicial black hole.
Think about having watched a mafia movie where someone crosses the mob boss, well, just, you know, Sopranos or whatever, and that person gets murdered, but no one knows. Like when Big Pussy Bompensero got killed out on the boat, spoiler alert, everybody, and they said, oh, he joined the witness protection program. So, but everybody's always in doubt, like, oh, did he get killed? Did he, what happened? What happened? That this is the tactic that the United States government now is taking. We are disappearing people without due process and not giving their families even notice of where they can find them, where they can lend support, where they can give money for their, I mean, there's probably not the same canteen system in El Salvador that there is here, but this is criminality run amok. This is the kind of shit that you hear about in developing nations where they have a strongman, autocrat, dictator type leader. And it's now common practice and the official position of the United States to behave like this.
Well, and again, they keep trying to act like it's the quote unquote worst of the worst, even when they are admitting that that's not the case. They made a mistake, quote unquote. Imagine a mistake like this.
the Maryland father who had been here for 14 years.
Yeah.
No criminal record.
Undoubtedly, they have made other quote unquote mistakes here. Yeah. And they don't care. They are also targeting people who use speech that they don't like. And so you have to start asking this question of, is your citizenship going to protect you? I mean, they're targeting these people based on tattoos that they have.
Yeah, like Air Jordan jump tattoos.
And they're not letting them go
autism
to court.
Autism speaks tattoos.
Yeah, there's no due process. They're not having their day in court to fight whatever evidence that they claim to have that proves that they're gang members.
Well, because with no due process, they don't have to present evidence. They just do what they do. And now, again, Donald Trump is signaling that he's ready to do this to American citizens.
Yeah, we're going to get there for sure. But first, I want to talk about Attorney General Pam Bondi, who was asked very specifically about this 60 Minutes reporting and found herself unable to rise to the occasion and give a response.
60 Minutes found that 75% of the immigrants who were sent to El Salvador do not have public criminal records. Is that true?
Do you mean in our country?
The Venezuelan migrants who were sent to...
Okay, well, they're not Venezuelan migrants. They're illegal aliens from Venezuela who should not have been in our country, who are committing the most violent crimes. So if you committed a murder in our country, we're going to keep you here, and we're going to seek the death penalty, and we're going to keep you in prison because our victims' families deserve that. But we don't have to charge them with every crime. We can deport them and get them out of our country and save room in our prisons because they should have never been in our country to begin with.
So you confirmed they didn't commit a crime,
thank
right?
You.
Is that what you're confirming?
Thanks, guys. Appreciate
your time. Thank you. She walks away.
And then you hear other reporters say that they appreciate Pam Bondi's time.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what? Are you guys living in the same world that we're living in? You have an opportunity to talk to Attorney General Pam Bondi, and you're going to say thank you for her time? She didn't answer your question.
Right. It's obsequious.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump, like you said, was asked about what he thinks about the possibility of sending Americans to this prison in El Salvador.
El Salvador, the president there said he would be willing to take American citizens in the federal prison population. Is that one of the ideas you're going to be discussing?
Well, I love that. If we could take some of our 20-time wise guys that push people into subways and that hit people over the back of the head and that purposely run people over in cars, if you would take them, I'd be honored to give them. I don't know what the law says on that, but I can't imagine the law would say anything different. If they can house these horrible criminals for a lot less money than it costs us, I'm all for it. But I'd only do according to the law. But I have suggested that, you know, why should it stop just at people that cross the border illegally? We have some horrible criminals, American grown and born. And if we have somebody that bops an old woman over the head, if we have somebody that is in jail 20 times and goes back and shoots people all over the place and then has a bad judge or a bad prosecutor that do nothing about him, all they worry about is politics and don't worry about that. I think if we could get El Salvador or somebody to take them, I'd be very happy with it. But I have to see what the law says. Okay, what else?
Two things. He said, I love that idea. The other thing that just struck me after listening to it again and after what he said yesterday, we're not going to get to this, but he signed, we're getting to it now, very briefly. He signed two presidential memorandums directing the Department of Justice to investigate both Miles Taylor, the guy who wrote the anonymous op-ed saying we're going to try to, you know, interfere with Donald Trump, get all this crazy shit he's doing. And then Chris Krebs, who just said, yeah, the 2020 election was secure, maybe the most secure that we've ever had. He referred to Chris Krebs as a wise guy, the same term he just used when touting the idea of sending Americans to this Salvadoran prison.
Hmm.
That pretty stark.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty alarming.
Well, and White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt was asked about this. We don't have the clip for it, but she said, quote, the president has said if it's legal, right, if there's a legal pathway to do that. It's an idea that he has simply floated and has discussed very publicly in the effort of transparency.
Oh, yeah. So transparent.
Well, you love for him to transparently explore ways to deport U.S. citizens to a torture prison.
Listen, even when Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the deplorable, disgusting human being who sent hundreds of thousands of Americans and Japanese migrants to internment camps during World War II, using the same law and justification as Donald Trump, by the way. Even when he did that, he kept them within the borders of the United States in the internment camps in Idaho and Utah and California and across the West. Donald Trump is talking about shipping people and is shipping people to the most hardcore torture prisons outside of the borders of our country.
And we also have new reporting from the Washington Post that shows that The United States wants to start monitoring immigrant social media for anti-Semitic activity. Quote, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services will begin screening immigrants' social media accounts for anti-Semitic content as grounds to deny visa and green card applications, the agency announced Wednesday, a move that immigration law and free speech experts said the government could use to target political speech it dislikes.
Yeah.
And this coincides with, I don't know if you saw this today, but at ICE.gov on Twitter posted this image that says, if it crosses the U.S. border illegally, it is our job to stop it. And it names four things: people, money, products, ideas.
Immigrations and Customs Enforcement believes it's their duty, their job, their requirement under statutory design to stop ideas from coming across the border. Is that
correct?
Holy shit.
Yes. So that's where we are.
Wait, and wait. But do you remember that eggs were expensive?
Right. It was definitely about the eggs. It was definitely about the eggs.
Yeah, we did the same fucking thing this time that we did last time when Donald Trump was elected. All economic anxiety. No, people are fucking racist. People hate black and brown people. People hate gay people. People want trans people eviscerated, out of existence. We have a lot of bigots amongst us.
Yeah, I shared a meme to our I Doubt It pages on social media that was like that scene from Community when the blonde character is looking into the camera and it's like, I can draw the line at racism, but don't touch my 401k.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's so many people, unfortunately. So
you really planned a very upbeat show.
Well, I'm sorry, but it's important for people to know
it is
happening, because the other, and we're going to get to this other story, but like people, maybe we should just do it now. People took to the streets. This is number 12. So there was a situation where ICE came in and arrested a mother and three kids. They put like a third grader in handcuffs, took them. They were being held in detention. And this community in Sackett's Harbor, I believe is what it's called. And this is actually Tom Homan's
community. York. Yeah, in New York.
And the community rallied against this move. They marched from wherever they were to Tom Homan's house. And there's a positive outcome in this, but this story represents why we need to be organized, why we need to be getting out in the streets, because the mother and the children were freed from detention. And I have to believe that it's in part because the community came together and they demanded this and they put pressure on it. And journalists were putting pressure on ICE, putting pressure on Tom Homan.
And when you punch a bully in the fucking mouth,
right?
And shit changes.
If you were taken off the street because of tattoos that you have and you were put in detention and you were disappeared, you would want a community to rally
Hell
behind
yes.
and try to save you. And yes. So we need these reminders that it is important to do this kind of work.
It's incumbent upon us. We are obligated to take care of one another.
Roughly 1,000 people converged on Sackett's Harbor with one goal.
I'm hoping to join all these people here today to make a statement that what happened last week was inexcusable.
Last week, federal agents executed this warrant on a Sackett's Harbor area farm. They got their guy, Marcel Meyer, a South African man accused of possessing child pornography, but they also arrested seven others they claim to be illegal aliens. Three of them are students at Sackett's Harbor Central School District, and they're being held at an ICE detention facility in Texas. Multiple sources have told us those kids and their mother were legally navigating the immigration process.
I find it absolutely abhorrent that they took these children, that they were following all the rules, and the rules don't seem to apply anymore, and it's heartbreaking.
Undeterred by heavy wind, protesters marched from the Sackett's Harbor Visitor Center to the home of Border Czar Tom Homan, urging ICE to bring the family home.
Fascists always need an enemy. And so right now, it seems that it was people of brown color. You could be next.
A few counter-protesters made an appearance in front of Homan's home. One man told us he was there to support the Border Czar, but he wasn't opposed to bringing the kids back.
It's tough for everybody because my children go to this school.
And they were all upset when they came home and found out the kids had been deported. And I had explained to them that, you know, that's the law. They got caught up in it. They probably...
It's not the law, fuckhole.
But they still got to go through the court process and legal process.
According to Homan, the family is being held while that South African man's crimes are being investigated. Sackett's Harbor's principal has been in touch with the kids and tells us a different story.
No, they were just very typical detention and expedited deportation proceedings. I think that we always promise our students that we're going to show up for them. We always promise them that we're going to keep them safe. And I think a lot of our community feels like we weren't able to hold true to that. And I think they're showing up because they're still showing up for them.
The rally has wrapped, but Jefferson County Democratic leaders tell us the fight is far from over. That won't stop until the family comes home to Sackett's.
We can't stop, right? We need to keep this message going. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of support here right now. And we need to keep it going until they are brought home. We're not going to stop.
Chad Charette, 7 News.
So like I said, the positive outcome here is that they have been released from custody after thousands of people or 1,000 protesters decided to march to Tom Homan's home. And maybe this is the pathway forward. Maybe there needs to be an ongoing camp out in front of Tom Homan's home.
Yeah.
And maybe there shouldn't be a moment of peace for Tom Homan.
For any of these fucking fascists.
When he's in public or when he's at the grocery store, or when he's trying to get a coffee.
Where's Antifa, by the way?
Maybe there should just never be a moment where he is not reminded of the terror and horror that he is inflicting on other people. But, okay, so that was like kind of a positive story because it had a positive outcome. So now we're just going to dive right back into. So the measles outbreak is ongoing and RFK Jr. exists and he's the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And he actually sat down for his first interview. We'll get to that in a moment. But first,
take
I want to
cod liver oil. It'll cure your measles.
I want to play this clip of Donald Trump responding to a reporter asking him his reaction because another child just died. Due to the measles outbreak. And so Donald Trump was asked to give a response about that. And here's his response.
Maybe as bad, actually.
How concerned are you about the measles outbreak? There was another fatality today, and what else would you like to see in terms of the response?
Well, I think they're doing reports on it. It's so far a fairly small number of people relative to what we're talking about. Something that people have known about for many, many years. I mean, measles has been, you know, this is not something new. And we'll see what happens. But certainly, if it you know, progresses, we'll have to take action very strongly.
So for me, this represents a coarsening of like political discourse. And I know that that's not the most important thing. But the fact that there wasn't even an attempt in response to learning about another death of
another
child's
death, a kid.
That he doesn't even like respond to that. He doesn't even talk about how about that.
He dismisses it. It's a very small number of people.
Yeah, he doesn't say he's like thinking of the family. There's not even an attempt at that.
Well, that's how you act when you're pro-life, Brittany. When all lives matter, that's how you behave.
Yeah, and again, I know it's like a small point, but I think it represents something that is not good
also,
about our society that measles, we're allowing this to happen.
Measles was considered eradicated in the year 2000. So look, this is very normal. There's always measles outbreaks. Kids are always dying from this eradicated disease based on the fact that we have mastered the measles vaccine and rubella. And mumps, the MMR vaccine.
Right, and related to the coarsening, apologies, is also that Donald Trump decided to go to a golf event instead of the dignified transfer of remains of soldiers who died in Lithuania, and barely even rated in the news. Because again, there's just this onslaught of terror constantly going on. But imagine any other president doing that. I mean, bar is in hell.
I don't know. Let's pick one from recent times. Let's say if Joe Biden had done this, what would have been the response from Fox News? They would have never let the story fucking go.
Yeah. So, of course, with the measles outbreak ongoing, Jesse, you alluded to it, that RFK has said, like, take the vaccine. right? He has said that. He wrote an op-ed a couple weeks ago we talked about where he mentioned it, but it's like down several paragraphs in the op-ed.
Only after he's like, cod liver oil.
Yeah, he keeps like hedging because he's prioritizing alternative treatments, but he still feels the need, I guess, or pressure. I don't really know
why. It's pressure.
I don't know why he keeps bringing up the vaccine because you know his heart isn't in it.
Well, listen, you can't claim you're anti-vax. You can't deny that you're anti-vax. It's slightly more difficult for your critics to claim you're anti-vax if you have said one or two times, oh yeah, go get that vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're also couching it with cod liver oil will cure you, even though now there people are overdosing on vitamin A or whatever and being hospitalized because of his quackery cures.
So he decided to attend, RFK Jr., the funeral for the second child who died of measles. And this is a news report of that coverage that, of course, I'm going to have some issues with.
Another child dying from measles in a rural West Texas Mennonite community. Family and friends gathering Sunday for the funeral of an 8-year-old girl. The Texas Health Department confirming the child's death. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. attended the service. Kennedy, for the first time, expressing support for the measles vaccine in a tweet saying, "The most effective way to prevent the spread of measles is the MMR vaccine." He said he is working with Texas health officials to control the outbreak. It comes as Kennedy has faced widespread criticism for suggesting alternative treatments like vitamin A and cod liver oil. Doctors say those will not prevent measles.
The secretary is one of the leading proponents of the myth that these vaccines cause autism. And so for him to be acknowledging that one of the most important tools we have to curb this outbreak is vaccination is really important here.
The two deaths are more than the U.S. has seen from the highly contagious disease in more than two decades. Measles are generally preventable through a two-course vaccine. There are now 642 confirmed cases across 22 states, 499 of those in Texas, including more than half a dozen cases at a daycare in Lubbock.
We have 7 cases within that daycare, in addition to multiple children that are currently under investigation.
The 8-year-old girl died here at UMC Children's Hospital in Lubbock. Doctors say the cause of her death was what they call measles pulmonary failure. She was otherwise healthy. Doctors say she had no other health conditions. However, she had not been vaccinated.
So they didn't mention in this news package that while RFK did, yes, talk about how people should get the vaccine or whatever,
they said Kennedy, for the first time, said blah, blah, blah.
Right. He also posted about his visit to Texas, including a photo with two doctors that he called extraordinary healers. And these people are quacks. And this is a nod to his quackery and the quackery community because, and this is according to reporting from Washington Post, one of the doctors Kennedy praised, Ben Edwards, has criticized measles vaccination and released a podcast earlier in the outbreak describing mass infection as, quote, God's version of measles immunization. Richard Bartlett, the other, has inaccurately touted the steroid treatment as a cure for COVID-19 and was disciplined by Texas medical regulators in 2003 for inappropriate use of antibacterial and steroid treatments. So he can continue to like say the thing that he is supposed to be saying, but he's doing it while being who he is and amplifying the rhetoric that he has amplified for decades. He's not changed just because he's signaling some indication that people should get the vaccine when he's going to this funeral. And then on the same visit of the funeral, where you think he would be doing a full-throated endorsement of vaccination, is meeting with people that he's calling extraordinary healers.
But have you considered how expensive eggs were, Brittany?
No, I guess I haven't.
Fucking dystopian.
Yeah, so like I said,
I mean, this is orders of magnitude worse than the first administration.
Oh, God.
Fucking off the... We left the charts a long goddamn time ago.
Oh, in so many ways. I mean, human rights violations, yeah. The deaths that are going to come from all of this, the deaths alone that are going to come from the changes that have been made at HHS, it's just going to be devastating.
Yeah.
And like I said, RFK Jr. sat down for his first interview. This was with CBS News. I'm trying to remember the doctor's name. I think it's Dr. LaPook. Yeah, Dr. John LaPook. And this is going to be in three different stages. So this first one is Dr. LaPook asking RFK directly about measles vaccination, and does he recommend that people go and get that?
It's one thing to say the measles vaccine is the best way of preventing spread, but it's another thing to then say, and therefore, we suggest that you get the measles vaccine.
We encourage people to get the measles vaccine.
Okay, so that, I mean, I think that's actually the next step, and that's news, as far as I'm concerned, that you're saying that. What's the position, philosophically, of the federal government in terms of public health?
The federal government's position, my position is people should get the measles vaccine, but...
But...
If that...
People should get the measles vaccine. This is me again. I'm doing the... This is me, not RFK.
Oh, I couldn't tell the transition.
I know, it's such a remarkable impression that it is difficult. People should get the measles vaccine as I stumbled through my... All right, back to RFK.
The government should not be mandating.
Understand.
You know, but I've always said during my campaign and in every part, every public statement I've made, I'm not going to take people's vaccines away from them.
Right.
What I'm going to do is make sure that we have good science so that people can make an informed choice. And we are doing that science today so that we know the risks of that product, and we also know what the benefits are. And right now, we don't know the risks of many of these products because they're not safety tested.
And I understand that position, but just to be clear, you are saying, and we do on the federal level, and you personally do recommend that people get the measles vaccine.
Yeah, and when I say they're not safety tested, what I mean is they're not adequately. Many of the vaccines are tested for only three or 4 days with no placebo group.
Before yesterday, HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. had said the measles vaccine is the most effective way to prevent the virus from spreading, but stopped short of actually recommending it. It's a stark about-face for the longtime vaccine skeptic.
All these different grains are grown locally on Indian land.
We met the secretary in Mesa, Arizona, where he visited a native health center as part of a three-state tour to promote the administration's Make America Healthy Again agenda, which includes overhauling standards for processed food.
FDA needs to start regulating food again and saying, you know, not just when food is adulterated, when there's bacteria in it. Let's look at the chemicals in it.
Yeah, like riboflavin. Also, quit calling him a fucking vaccine skeptic.
Thank you.
Call him an anti-vax quack.
An anti-vaccine activist.
Yes.
Yeah, he's not a vaccine skeptic. That is a very important point. Also, I think that Dr. LaPook did a good job in this interview with RFK Jr., particularly in the last question that he asked him, but I don't like the framing of the vaccine skepticism, and I also don't appreciate him saying that he did an about face, right? When he was answering that question and saying that people should get vaccinated,
he's hedging.
It's like he's getting his teeth pulled. Like, right. He feels there's a visceral level of feeling uncomfortable that is just palpable in the room.
No, that's just his voice.
That you can tell that he doesn't want to say it. And you can tell he doesn't want to say it because he follows it up with, but I don't think it should be mandated by the government. And then he starts talking about safety concerns that he has. So again,
as they announced that they're going to disallow fluoride in the water.
Right.
Get the fuck out of here.
All of this is hedging. And also, the New York Times today, this headline, they wrote, quote, "As his chronic disease tour wraps, Kennedy hits his stride." The health secretary seemed stoic, maybe nervous even, at the start of his first major trip. But on a hike with the Navajo Nation leaders, he was finally in his element.
Just chill.
So the media is just desperate to do anything other than its job in this case.
Yeah.
And paint him as who and what he is. Unfortunately for RFK, he can't really help himself to look good. there's no way to present himself so that he looks good.
Yeah.
And this was a good moment where the interviewer asked him specifically about cuts to Health and Human Services and how damaging they're going to be. And RFK is like, what? Cuts? Who?
You proposed more than $11 billion in cuts to local and state programs addressing things like infectious disease, mental health, addiction, and childhood vaccination. Did you personally approve those cuts?
I'm not familiar with those cuts.
There's like more than 50 pages of cuts that I actually went through.
Were mainly DEI cuts, which the president.
There were a lot, but I'll give you, for example, about $750,000 of a University of Michigan grant into adolescent diabetes was cut. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, and that's something that we'll look at.
Yeah, so I mean, that's, you know, I wonder, should these be considered DOGE cuts?
I couldn't speak to that, Dr. LePuig, because I'm not familiar with that particular study. But there's a number of studies that were cut that came to our attention and that did not deserve to be cut, and we reinstated them. Our purpose is not to reduce any level of scientific research that's important.
As they canceled cancer breakthroughs. But... I don't know who his doctor is, but he's fucking this whole thing up. This is not a good job on his part. He's giving him the out. Are these DOGE cuts? Like, here, let me give you some reason that you can attach yourself to extricate yourself from blame for what's taking place in your agency. And not good.
And he still can't help himself and take that out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's remarkable that you have the Secretary of Health and Human Services sitting there and saying, I don't know what these are. These were DEI cuts.
Yeah.
And then he's faced with like specific programs and numbers, and you can tell it makes him uncomfortable because, well, how do you answer for that? How do you answer for what you've done?
Yeah.
How do you answer for all of these programs that you're cutting that are going to detrimentally impact millions of people? It's horrifying, and he has no answer for it. But there was a final question that was asked, and this kind of gets to the moral, ethical outlook in this country. How do people view the role of healthcare? Is it a right? Like you hear people like Senator Bernie Sanders talk about, do we have a right to healthcare? Or is healthcare something that is only accessible if you have the capital? And I wonder if you can guess what RFK Jr.'s answer is likely to be.
What's the basic level of care every American should receive, and who should pay for it?
When it comes to healthcare, that's a difficult question because people have a choice about how sick they're going to be, many people. If you don't have any choice, then then we should give you all the resources that you want. But I mean, it's a moral question too, and it's a philosophical question. If you're smoking three packs of cigarettes a day, should you expect society to pay when you get sick?
Yes.
Maybe pay for you to help stop smoking.
Or should we encourage people? Should we incentivize people to take care of themselves? And then when they get sick, make sure they're taken care of.
Was it your choice to invite the brain worm into your brain? Was it your fucking choice? Oh, wait, never mind. He's got the capital to take care of himself. Listen, it's stark because when Brett number one almost died in Scotland last summer, I talked to many nurses. I was in that hospital room all day, every day with Lisa, his wife. And I talked to all kinds of nurses. And there was one guy, and he was talking about the unhealthy population there in Glasgow. And all of the comorbidities and all of the alcoholism and the obesity and all of the diabetes, the problems that they have. And no one acted like they should pull themselves up with their bootstraps, blah, blah, blah. No, it's like, no, we have an obligation as a community, as a society, as a culture to take care of people. Yeah, we should incentivize people and make it easier for them to make better choices relative to their health. But if they get sick, you fucking take care of them. It's not a pull yourself up by your goddamn bootstraps deal here. It should not be. If we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, life is there. How can you have a right to life without the ability to protect that life and preserve that life through healthcare? Fuck off! RFK Jr.?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same argument that we hear when Republicans want to put in place things like work requirements and put in this means testing, and they want to create the administrative state that costs millions of dollars to put into place, and then it's going to cost millions of dollars to operate that administration just in order to screen people out. I mean, think of what he said there. There's some people that have made choices, and then there's some people that haven't made choices. And so in RFK's ideal moral world, you would have some sort of administration that has been created that is going to make that judgment, where someone has to fill out some paperwork and, you know, talk about the health choices that they've made in their life. And then they're going to appear before a panel who gets to decide whether or not you made enough poor choices to have to pay for your own health care and fuck off. Is that moral? Is that just? Does that even make economic sense for these people that are so worried about how much things cost to administer? And I also want to say, people might be like, hey, why aren't they dropping the bumper, I forgot what we call it.
Disclaimer
that prevents Britney from being...
The views and opinions of Jesse Dolemore are solely those of Jesse Dolemore and do not reflect the views
that
and
one?
Opinions of Britney Page.
Yes.
She was a far superior person and much more measured and reasonable in her views and analysis.
Particularly when you talked about the brain worm, for example. So I just want to cover that really quick. The brain worm is... The only reason we know about the brain worm is because in RFK Jr.'s divorce proceedings from, I think, his second wife, he said that this brain worm that they found reduced his cognitive capacity and impacted his earning potential. And he was using that argument to try to get out of paying alimony. So the only reason we know about the brain worm is because he was trying to get out of paying alimony.
He used it as a crutch, as a legal excuse, because he admitted, oh, my cognitive capacity was lowered and I couldn't make money.
The man who comes from generational wealth, who makes almost $1 million in lawsuit referrals to vaccine companies.
Just one item of his $8 million a year or whatever it is.
Yeah, so he was worried about that. So that's why I think the brain worm is fair game. But
also, fuck him. He's hurting kids.
Well, and again,
if you don't like that I make fun of his voice, find something else to fucking attach yourself to.
Yeah. So what's concerning about this is they held a cabinet meeting today, and RFK Jr. said that by September, we will know what has caused autism and we will be able to eliminate those exposures.
I saw this. And by the way, that's not how science works. You can't give a deadline. We're going to know by this date, X date, whether blah, blah, blah. That's not how it works, dipshit. You're showing your hand.
Well, that's how it works when you hire someone who's not a scientist, who has been involved in anti-vaccine activism, who has had his research retracted. When you hire that type of person to start looking at this issue, and your plan is to just fabricate data and get the answer that you want to hear. That's where we're headed, by the way. So
yeah, just put a pin in that in September. Mark that in your calendars to wait for that outcome.
Right. So the other big thing that happened is the markets were crashing and everyone was worried about their 401ks because of the tariffs that Donald Trump imposed. And everyone was panicking, including the billionaires that support Donald Trump, who were coming out and saying, this doesn't seem to be working. This seems like a terrible idea. And so Donald Trump came out and he didn't pause the tariffs. People are saying he paused the tariffs. He gave every country except China a flat rate of 10% for 90 days.
By the way, that's a 10% inflation on any foreign good or any good that contains a foreign component.
And it's 125% tariffs on China.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people that are saying he paused the tariffs.
He did not.
He did not pause the tariffs. It's important
to say that. I drilled home on that today because the media is failing on that point. They're acting like it's a full retreat when no, he's lessening the crazy tariffs to a less crazy but still crazy level.
Right. And so the question is now becoming, what happened here? What happened behind the scenes that we don't know about?
Because he posted on social media, now's a good time to buy DJT.
Right.
Signaling to his cronies, signaling to his millionaire and billionaire friends, buy, I'm getting ready to do something that we know is going to impact the market in a profoundly positive way. Get in early now.
Right. And the NASDAQ call volume spiked just before the announcement was made about the changes to the tariffs for 90 days. So Elizabeth Warren took to the floor and she gave a speech about what does this look like? This looks like Donald Trump is helping insiders cash in with his tariff flip-flopping.
Donald Trump is trashing our economy. First, Donald Trump imposed across-the-board tariffs. Then, just a few hours ago, he dropped those tariffs to 10% on everyone and moved the tariffs up to 125% on China, up from 105% yesterday. Now, there's confusion, there's chaos. No one knows what the tariffs will be tomorrow or the next day or next week or next month. But here's what we do know. Are prices still going up? Yes. Are businesses still wary about investing? Yes. Are millions of working people still worried about their jobs? And millions of small businesses still worried about closing shop? Yes. And right before Donald Trump declared that some of his tariffs were off again, he sent out a message to his billionaire buddies. He posted, "This is a great time to buy," in all caps. Was that market manipulation? Was it corruption in plain sight? We need an independent investigation into market manipulation because Americans need to know whether President Trump or anyone in his administration manipulated the market to benefit their donors, all while they are working for the American people and while small businesses and those working families are paying a price. It's a disaster. But here's the thing. Republicans in Congress have a chance to stop him right now. If they do nothing, they, along with Trump, are responsible for the fallout. Congress could end this dangerous trade war right now by passing my bipartisan resolution with Senator Ron Wyden to turn off the fake emergency authority that Donald Trump is using to impose his worldwide and chaotic tariffs. So I have a simple question for the Senate. Why aren't we passing this resolution this instant?
So there was also this video that surfaced after Trump's tariff U-turn, and it was a video of him in the Oval Office in there with, I guess, like NASCAR drivers came to the White House.
It was Charles Schwab and Penske, who's a race car team owner.
Yeah, and so after this tariff U-turn, Donald Trump starts bragging about how much money Charles Schwab and I guess the other guy made from this.
This is Charles Schwab. It's not just a company, it's actually an individual. And he made $2.5 billion today, and he made $900 million. That's not bad. Because, you know, he's in financials.
He made $1 billion based on what he learned from allegedly what he learned from Donald Trump in advance of anybody else knowing. Donald Trump giving the information is illegal. Them using the information they received, also illegal. Crimes were very likely committed here.
And according to Bloomberg, quote, the world's wealthiest people added $304 billion to their combined net worth on Wednesday, the largest one-day gain in the history of the Bloomberg Billionaires Index, as stock market soared after Donald Trump pledged to pause tariffs. There they are, pause tariffs, they say. U-turn on tariffs. So this is just more of the same, more of the oligarchy that we're hearing about so much from Bernie Sanders, AOC, and it's disturbing in numerous ways, but primarily because the people who are going to have to work until they're literally in the grave are for some reason celebrating this man and celebrating the billionaires that he surrounds himself with, having more money than they could ever conceive of. And that's something that I struggle to understand. And I understand racism is a potent motivator for a lot of people, but what the hell is going on? When you are a poor and working class person who's going to work until you are in the grave, yeah, you don't have retirement. What are you doing supporting these people who don't care if you live or die?
Yeah, think about how many generations of your entire family, how many generations it would take to earn $900 million. And that dumb fuck did it in hours. in just a few hours, because Donald Trump announced and then the markets close, he gained $1 billion more.
You know what's funny is I'll do videos about this and I'll get comments from conservatives that are like, well, why don't you share your money with, you know, like the unhoused people that you're talking about? It's like, you want me to share my money, but you don't want Elon Musk to pay his fair share of taxes?
And
you want me to do it.
We share our money.
Yes. So I do want to play just one brief clip from the cabinet meeting, and then we're going to end on a positive note with some Bernie Sanders fire that we all need to hear to keep us charged and ready to go.
I'm glad you included that.
Yeah. So this is Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins, and in this,
I think it's Rollins.
Rollins in this cabinet meeting.
Think Schmollins.
In this cabinet meeting that happened today, and there's a lot that's remarkable about this clip. There's no real important context. I think it's just important to hear how you have to talk and speak to and about Donald Trump if you are going to be in his presence and have him not try to go after you.
So this is Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins.
She's not a Christian!
I was like, wow, he's being really official with the clip. Why is he doing that?
Here it is.
Sir, first, we are, I would say, more than friends. We've all become family. And I think that what you have assembled in your vision is a turning point and an inflection point in American history. And so just being a part of that is the greatest honor. So thank you for that. And again, just the relationships here and the honor and respect we have for each other is a reflection of you and your leadership. So I just wanted to say that first. The second thing.
So fucking weird.
Isn't it disturbing?
I mean, it's hard to beat the rap that you're a cult when that's what a fucking cabinet meeting is about. It's not getting to the business of the American people and the country. It's showering Donald Trump and his ego and insecurities with praise about the honor and, oh, thank you so much for bestowing upon me. You're the agriculture secretary. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, and there was one of my favorite moments from the debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris was when she talked about how easy he is to manipulate because of his insecurity, and that everyone knows all they have to do is compliment him. And it's so true. That's all anyone needs to do. That's why he's such a perfect target for manipulation.
Yeah.
Because he's so easy to read. He's so fragile and weak. And he thinks we can't see it, but we all know, and everyone around him knows. Every single person that interacts with him or sees him knows, and that can be manipulated and used against him.
Yeah.
So we're going to end with Bernie Sanders because he did a town hall with CNN's Anderson Cooper last night. And of course, he's been doing his fighting oligarchy tour across the country with AOC making appearances along the way. And Bernie could be using his time in other ways.
Yeah, he's 83 years old.
He could be at home, enjoying his life, having a good time, and instead he's touring the country, trying to give people hope.
And by the way, not in an effort to stand up a presidential campaign. I'm not interested in that. That's not why I'm doing this.
Right. And I wish people would just let the cynicism and the pessimism kind of die for a moment and not try to think about ulterior motives that Bernie Sanders has, because I want you to think of that. He's an octogenarian. He's at the end of his life. He knows he's at the end of his life.
Yeah.
And he could be doing other things. I saw an interview where he did, I think it was Scott McFarland, I think, was the reporter. And they were trying to say, well, you just enjoy this. You enjoy the fight. You enjoy being engaged in this. And he's like, well, I could be doing other things that I enjoy as well.
Yeah.
But this is important to me. And it's almost a way to downplay how important this moment is and what he's doing. So he went on CNN, and like he does, he spends a lot of time talking about the obstacles that are in place for poor and working class people. And there was a great moment where he tried to say, you know, these are the things we need to force CNN to talk about while he's on CNN.
So when I'm running around the country with Alexandria and other people, what we are trying to do is demand that working class people begin to stand up and fight for their rights. There is no reason we should be the only major country not to have health care, not to have paid family and medical leave, et cetera, et cetera. Why we have the highest rate of childhood poverty, almost any major country. 22% of our seniors living on $15,000 a year. Anybody here think that makes sense? No. All right, it doesn't. But you got to get CNN to talk about these issues. You got to get your members of Congress to talk about these issues.
We're literally talking about it right now.
Yeah, but I'm forcing you to talk about it, Anderson.
This is Joel. We invited you. This is Joel Pritikin.
Yeah, so I love this moment, and it's important because if you do spend any time watching CNN, they still dedicate a lot of their programming to having people like Scott Jennings on.
I was just gonna say
to represent the Donald Trump administration's views, and they spend a lot of time parsing things and
acting as though it's business as usual.
Yeah, I mean, falling into that trap of trying to be courteous or polite about the moment that we're in. I mean, the other day we were watching Anderson and he was struggling to just come out and say whatever he was trying to fucking say about Donald Trump. And it's like, dude, just say what you need to say about what's happening in this moment. So it's nice when you have people like Bernie Sanders who do that. And he took the time also to talk about why, in opposition to someone like RFK Jr., why it's important that we guarantee health care in this country.
Raise your hand if you think the American health care system is broken. Raise your hand.
Majority, everyone.
Not a majority, for everyone, everybody in the room.
And I can see behind that guy. But.
And that is, all right, question again. How many nations, wealthy nations in the world, do not guarantee health care to all people as a human right? Anybody know the answer? Which country? All right. Now, you're not going to hear much about that on corporate television. You're not going to hear much about that in the United States Congress. We are the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee health care to all people. 85 million of us are uninsured or underinsured. 60,000 die each year because we can't get to a doctor on time. That's the bad news. You know what the good news is? The insurance companies are making tens of billions of dollars every year denying you coverage. The drug companies charge us the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. So how does it happen that in the wealthiest country in the history of the world, we're spending twice as much per capita as the people in other countries, and yet we have one of the worst outcomes, healthcare outcomes, of any country on earth? And it gets back to money in politics and the domination of big money, in this case, insurance companies, drug companies, over the Republican and Democratic.
I want to try to get some more of our audience questions. Joel,
I know you do, but I want to talk about...
I know.
No, I want to, you know, sometimes these issues about health care, about income and wealth inequality are not talked about in the corporate media, and it's time that we did talk about them. That's why the question a moment ago, why are people losing faith in the American system? We don't talk about it on CNN. We don't talk about it in Congress. It's because they understand that a handful of billionaires exert enormous influence. And that has got to change.
More of this energy.
Yes.
Absolutely more of this. Because he's, well, and he's right. This doesn't get talked about enough on corporate media. And I'm glad he's shutting down the pace at which Anderson Cooper, who I like, by the way, that he wants to handle the programming. No! I'm here. I've got the fucking podium. We're going to talk about the thing I want to talk about right now. Just can it for a second.
Absolutely. And when Anderson tried to downplay how many hands went up in response to
Yeah, he goes, well, a majority. He goes, no, not a majority. Everybody. Yeah. It was everybody.
And he's like, oh, I didn't see the guy over there. He's trying to make excuses.
But also the camera panned. The camera showed it was everybody.
Yeah. So I guess that's a hopeful moment to end the show on because there are elected officials who get it and who are out there trying to do the right thing. And if you don't feel like your elected official is doing the right thing,
202-224-3121. That is a Capitol switchboard.
Yes. And we will link to Five Calls as well, because that's an important organization that if you are afraid to make the phone call or you're nervous about it, you don't know how it's going to go. It gives you a script that you can read about whatever topic is important to you.
Yeah.
And it's an important resource. So we would recommend that. And I will put it in the links below.
We would love to hear from you about these and any other things that are on your mind, 657-464-7609. And of course, you can email a voice memo or a regular old-fashioned email to idoubtit@dollemore.com. Please consider supporting the work we do, helping us produce this show. You can go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast and pick a tier and help us keep the lights on and the mics on. We love you very much. We'll see you next time on episode 945. Until then, for Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollimore, and this has been I Doubt It.